New Zealand cinematographer Baz Eidoin won an Emmy a few weeks ago for his work on the Star Wars series The Mandalorian. He's a veteran in Hollywood. Credits include American Sniper and There Will Be Blood. But for The Mandalorian, he used groundbreaking virtual production technology. It's a Disney Plus series. Taika Waititi did the voiceover for the bounty hunter droid and directed the season finale. And he's been signed by Disney to direct and co-write a new Star Wars feature. And it feels like Baz Eidoin is part of a kind of Kiwi mafia taking over Hollywood. Is that what it feels like, Baz?
Well, I don't know if it feels like a mafia, Kim. But it does feel great that there are a number of Kiwis doing really well over there.
Yeah. I mean, you've worked with Taika before?
No, I had only met him socially before we did the finale together.
And you're due to work on him in the future for a project you cannot go into too much detail on.
I am working with him now. We're in prep for a movie we're shooting in Australia, the next Thor installment, Love and Thunder.
Ooh, and that's fun, I imagine.
Oh, it's a ball of fun. Taika's obviously a treat to work with. He's just such a wonderful guy and a great visionary.
As he jokingly said, his role in The Mandalorian is a robotic actor, because he literally is in this weird bounty hunter robot. And I had no idea it was him at all.
He did a great job of voice acting for that.
Tell me, are you using this technology that you used in The Mandalorian to good effect, and we'll talk about it in more detail in a moment, are you using it on movies now, or is it only for the kind of television series that The Mandalorian is?
No, it's being used on some films that I'm involved with at the moment, and also on other films around the world. So it's got great versatility, whether it's film or TV.
And tell me a little bit about it and why it worked for The Mandalorian.
The without getting too technical, the simple concept is that it's a huge, big wall of TVs, massive, big wall of TVs and a ceiling. So it creates a lighting environment, but also a photographic background that you can shoot. So in the morning, we can be in Iceland. And if we change the ground plane at lunchtime, we can be on a beach in Hawaii. The background is that realistic and that versatile and that adjustable that we can move film crews to different locations all around the world.
And you don't have to go all around the world. That's a huge bonus, although could be the end of the New Zealand film industry.
Well, you still need to go there to shoot all those background plates. And there are some ways of shooting that you can't do it all in the volume. So there will still be film crews coming to New Zealand.
All right. That's a relief. And why did it need to be done this way, given that people have got on quite well without it in the past?
It's efficient. It actually saves a little bit of money. It creates a fantastic pipeline for the post-production that makes things a lot easier. And there's so much work on films and television now that's done in post-production, whether it's CG or visual effects. So there are many advantages from a very deep production level of why it helps.
What do you mean? You mean less needs to be done in post-production?
Absolutely. To a lot of, unless there's other elements being added, like explosions or flying ships or things like that, there can be a lot less post-production work done because it's all done in pre-production.
Explosions and flying ships, just like you have in The Mandalorian, you mean?
Exactly. Or Marvel movies, you might say.
Yeah. You've worked on a Star Wars movie before. You worked on Rogue One, a Star Wars story. So you knew what you were after. I'm not a Star Wars aficionado, you know. I feel like, oh my God, it's too late to start now because everybody talks the language. But I did enjoy The Mandalorian, but I kept thinking that there were things I was missing because I haven't spent the last God knows how long watching all the Star Wars movies. Did you have to swat up?
Yes, I did have to swat up. For Rogue One, especially, that was a very important film in the history of, in the universe of Star Wars. That, you know, there's nine films, nine, obviously, and our one happened just a little bit before four, and so it was very important that that Rogue One was accurate, and it felt like it blended and what could be seen as part of being the same story. So yes, I did have to swat up, but Kim, they're actually quite enjoyable films. You could jump into some of them. Not too late.
Well, it's a bit like Game of Thrones, right? Sometimes it just is a bit too late to start, don't you think?
Yes, maybe sometimes, yes, if it's such an epic adventure.
Yeah.
You can dip your toes in, though.
Can I, without missing out on too much?
No, not at all. I'd certainly recommend Rogue One. That's a great rollicking adventure. And that's the joy, I think, of all of these Star Wars stories. And one of the great things that I loved really about working on Mandalorian was that they're great stories. They're great. It's a way to tell great stories. That's actually what the volume helps, is it helps us become better storytellers. And at the end of the day, that's what really is attractive to me about being a filmmaker, is that I'm a storyteller.
All right, well, tell me the story for those who might not even have seen the internet memes of Baby Yoda, which is ridiculously adorable. Give us an insight into the plot of The Mandalorian, which is basically a sci-fi western, right? It's a western.
Yes, samurai western, perhaps. Ah. Sci-fi samurai western. It's about a lone Ronin, somebody who's the war has perhaps left him on the side, a wandering warrior, and one of his missions at the beginning, this is season one, of course, one of his missions is to go and capture somebody, because that's what he is. He's a bounty hunter. He will capture people. And he goes to capture this bounty, and it turns out that it's a child, a 50-year-old child, but still a child. And his paternal instincts are aroused, and he becomes they become a peer, a partnership, and that's actually the great way of telling the story, is that the two of them, because Mandalorian's wearing a helmet, it's quite difficult to see the emotions in his face, but he and the child together create a great team, and then we obviously can see them going on a great journey. The Mandalorian knows that he's not supposed to permanently look after this child, so he's really trying to find the right people to look after the child. And isn't that child so adorable?
Oh, ridiculously adorable. And all the right things that go directly to the heart. It's just insanely adorable. Mandalorian, Mando, the helmet comes off at a certain point.
It did. At the end of, in Tyker's episode, at the end of the season, yes.
Ah.
So, but everyone would have seen that because that was season one.
Yeah.
So, you got to glimpse a bit of Pedro Pascal underneath there.
And how much acting does Pedro Pascal have to do? Do you really think, wrapped up in all that metal with no face?
How much acting? Well, it's very difficult to act in that environment. It becomes a very unusual method to portray all of those complex emotions when you have to start limiting what options you have. You can't raise your eyebrows or, you know, squint your eyes. It's all about very subtle degrees of body language. So it was a real challenge to do that. Real challenge to photograph that as well, to make sure that was one of the strong challenges that, you know, every day we would want to make sure that we achieved that, you know, making sure that we understood what Mando, the character, was trying to say.
Did I read that because he wears a reflective metal costume, that it's better, that the technology is better for that kind of reflectivity, that it makes it hard if you have the blue or the green screen business going on?
Absolutely. If we had shot this as a traditional blue screen film, there would have been a massive amount of work on his wardrobe to get rid of all those blue screens and to put the right lighting on top of it. So, like the volume is a lighting environment, and so that created a perfect lighting lit the subject or the foreground perfectly, but also created all the perfect reflections on him. Yes, you're right.
So if you did not have this technology, you called it the volume, you could not have made a Star Wars TV series?
With somebody with a mirror ball helmet, we would have been able to do it, but it would have been much more expensive and certainly less easy to do.
Yeah, because TV production, it's cheaper, right? You can't have a long time and loads of money, such as you can with a movie. So this kind of virtual production technology makes it possible for the Skywars look.
Yes, it certainly made it easier to get through the schedule of the day. The schedule pressure on a TV show is much greater than on a film, and so we could get through more work in a day by using the volume. Absolutely.
Did I see on your CV that you'd worked on True Detective?
Yes, I did. I operated on that with another Kiwi DP, Nigel Bluck, and his wife Jack Fitzgerald were the first and second unit DPs on that. And that was season two of True Detective.
I talked to Matthew McConaughey the other day.
I listened to that. It was lovely.
I loved True Detective, didn't you?
Season one was phenomenal. I liked the script for season two.
Oh, but not so much the cinematography.
No, I thought the cinematography was beautiful.
What didn't you like about season two?
Thought some of the performances weren't necessarily fantastic, Kim, but I shouldn't go too far down that rabbit hole.
Well, possibly not if you want to work with Matthew McConaughey again in the future. I
Oh my
don't think
goodness,
he'd
but yeah,
bear a
but well, I
grudge,
didn't. I
eh?
haven't. I haven't, but I'd
Ah.
love to.
You didn't work with him at all?
No, he was on season one and I was on season two of
Oh,
True
I see.
Detective.
Gotcha, gotcha, gotcha. What was the first movie you ever worked on?
It was called Sylvia, about Sylvia Aston Warner. And it was 1984. And my sister helped arrange the job. I'd been working at TV New Zealand on the photocopy machine, not altogether too happy, thinking that this was an interesting position in the film and television business. And so I went off to be a runner on Sylvia, and I loved it. I was driving actors around, driving film around to the lab, and I was just fascinated by the whole process. I was a little wide-eyed kid.
Take me back a bit. You joined TVNZ and you ended up on the photocopy machine.
I did. I harangued them. As soon as I came out of high school, I knew I wanted to work somewhere in the film and television business. So I harangued TV New Zealand for about 6 months for a job, applying for everything that I was vastly underqualified for. And they finally rang me up one day and said, "Look, we've got this job. We're going to advertise it for about half an hour, but we want you to come and get it because just stop bothering us, please." And so it was working on a photocopy machine. So while I was there working on the photocopy machine, I discovered that I could second myself. Lovely thing that it being a, t a national government, or not national government, but a government organization, I could second myself to other departments. So I learned how editors worked and cameras worked and all of the other production departments worked. And so I did that until the manager of the photocopy department got mad and said, "You can't do that anymore." So I left to go and do a film.
And now you can operate photocopy machines, except that I don't suppose we have them anymore, really, do we?
We still do, but people help me do that now.
You have people to do that for you.
There are people that help me operate those complex things, yes.
Ha ha. The next Star Wars, then, you're involved in that?
No, I don't know anything about what's happening in my career apart from the film that I'm on at the moment.
All right.
There's a few other things floating around, but I know Taika's doing that, but we're not talking about that.
We're not talking about that. When you win an Emmy, do the job offers start coming in? Like, does it have a fortuitous effect on your career?
It's certainly a shining moment for me, and it certainly reflects well. I've been on sort of a rocket ship of a career ride in the last few years. Even before Mandalorian, I've been very lucky to have been noticed by a couple of people that have push me forward. Greg Fraser, the DP that I co-DP'd season one with and also worked with Rogue One on, I was shooting additional photography with him for a few projects. Vice, the fantastic story about Dick Cheney.
That was a fantastic story.
Yeah, it was a great film. And Adam McKay, that director, is really wonderful. You know, he's got some great credits under his belt. Succession's a great story. He's a wonderful director to work with as well.
What's the highlight of your career apart from that, do you think? Let's take out the highlights that are obvious, like Star Wars, but what else?
It's really hard to pick up, you know, big ones. Working with Daniel Day-Lewis on There Will Be Blood with Paul Thomas Anderson was quite extraordinary. That was particularly moving. There were times when we shot that out in the Texas desert that it felt like, with the one or two cameras and the director in the room, that I was sitting in a theater with two people giving, Paul Dano and Daniel Day-Lewis, giving this performance of a lifetime, and there's an audience of four or five people watching it. And it, you know, I still get goosebumps now thinking about moments like that. It was a beautiful, wonderful experience. Paul Thomas Anderson is a really unusual and fantastic and emotional and demands, you know, honesty, emotional honesty at all times, which is a really interesting way to work. Great director. I obviously love all of his work. Working with him on The Master was also very interesting and very enjoyable. So many other films that I've worked on that have been great highlights. Good Night, Good Luck was a really good one. Michael Clayton was a beautiful film. I've done about eight films with George Clooney, so that's been a treat.
He's a good actor, George Clooney, isn't he?
He is. He doesn't get enough credit for it because
he doesn't,
because
he's
so
ridiculously handsome.
It's very funny and constantly making practical jokes on set.
When you talk about a director like Anderson, whose extraordinary demands, you know, a lot of emotional authenticity from the actors, do you have to use the camera differently? Does he direct you, or do you have to figure out what they want?
Relationship between the cinematographer and the director is one of the most sacrosanct on set, in that it's always the director's vision, but the joy of cinematography is that you get to be able to technically be their eyes and express what they want. So there should be constant direction or discussion, collaboration between the director and the DP on set. It's never somebody going out and just taking photographs of what a director's doing with actors. That is one of the great collaborations that happens in a film production between the DP and the director.
You've worked with Steven Soderbergh a lot too, haven't you?
Yeah, I did about 5 or 6 years with him. I was a camera assistant then. I wasn't a DP. That was also fantastic. We did some beautiful films together. And Ocean's 11 was obviously a blast. That was so much fun.
Ocean's 11, again, with George Clooney and a number of other huge stars. And people concentrate on the glitzy, starry thing about them, but they're also really good movies, aren't they?
Yeah, I didn't work on Ocean's 12 or 13, but 11 obviously was the first one in the series, and it was good enough that they made a few more. It was a good film. It was a great rollicking ride, and it was also a fabulous homage to the original with Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack. You know, I don't think we did a disservice to the original.
Did you do Traffic as well?
I did. Huh. I did, which was a fascinating journey around many, many places. I think we went to, I don't know how many countries we went to, but it was extraordinary following that drug trail.
Did you, when you shoot a movie, do you become attached to some of the footage that the director may reject? Do you ever have an argument about it?
I am, a DP's role is not, normally doesn't normally extend into the editing room once we've finished shooting. So the director normally would have obviously final say on what they include in the edit of the film. there have been occasions when a scene has come up and, you know, there's been a conversation with the director. I remember actually Adam McKay having a meeting and asking Greg Fraser and myself his opinion of a certain scene or a certain sequence and how it was. Obviously, that's an enjoyable collaboration, but normally that wouldn't happen.
Are you back to normal?
So if I'm attached to something, then I have to let it go.
Are you back to normal? You're in LA. Is that where you're talking to me from? Oh, you're in Sydney.
I'm in a production office in Sydney at the
Jolly
moment,
good.
Yes.
And are you able to roam around, or do you have certain, you know, you had to go into quarantine here or there now?
I've lived in LA for 25 years. I flew down here 4 weeks ago now, and I had 2 weeks of quarantine when I landed, government quarantine, and I've been out for about 2 weeks now.
And when are you going back to LA?
We all finish this in June of next year, and then I'll see what's happening after that.
Yep. Crikey, who knows what's happening in June of next year?
I need to come back to New Zealand and see my mum, my lovely 91-year-old mum, Nola, who I haven't seen for a little while, sadly, because of COVID.
Where does Nola live?
At the Adhilary Village in Remuera.
All right. Will she be listening?
Hi, mum.
And Nola, I am sure, is saying hi back. Does she call you Baz or Barry?
She calls me Barry. A lot of other people call me Baz, of course.
It's very nice to talk to you, either Barry or Baz, and I bet your mum is looking forward to you coming back here.
Indeed. I'm looking forward to coming back as well, Kim.
Thank you. Baz Idoan. We were talking about The Mandalorian, for which he won an Emmy.